Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa. You can find me on LinkedIn as Coach Sam UK. I'm a business and emotional intelligence coach. I have been in the industry for past 15 years and I have delivered several hundred courses, spoke in front of 8,000 individuals. So this podcast is all about heart-centered conversation with my guest. I have been blessed to get in front of or to brought in some amazing guests on my podcast. So do check it out. It's called Chai with Sam Dosa. Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa. Today I have Sarah Flynn. She is a British born. She's been living in Leeds. And her journey has been amazing, but also some great adventures, I would say, because I never use the word challenges. So Sarah is a successful property investor, developer and business owner, and spent last 3 years building up a portfolio with two main strategies of HMO. If people who doesn't know HMO, we will discuss that as well, and the flips, as well as there is another term we usually use in the property industry is rent to rent. Sarah's invested 1.5 million worth of property in the UK and focus on making multiple income stream out of each property as opposed to buying property in volume. So that's just a brief introduction. I just wanted to capture upon. There are a lot to about Sarah. So let me welcome my guest, Sarah Flynn. Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa, Sarah.
Hi, Sam. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's an absolute pleasure to be here, and hello to all your listeners as well. So as Sam said, yes, I am a property investor, though that wasn't the initial path, I suppose, that I was set out on. I think that's sort of what Sam alluded to in the introduction. So for me, a long time ago now, I obviously left school, left college, and didn't really know what I wanted to do. I felt that I was set for bigger things, but that never really transpired at the time. My mum was in banking, so I found myself sort of slipping seamlessly into a similar role. So sort of went from cashier all the way up to a regional sales manager, which was fantastic, and I had a great career there. I sort of went from Yorkshire Bank to Lloyds Banking Group, and that's where I settled for possibly 10 years. Did some great roles, as I said, and everything was going really well for me. However, in 2015, that everything sort of changed for me. So my brother at the time, he was 19, and in the August, he came to my house and we were chatting, and he sort of mentioned that he had a pain in his back. And that pain, unfortunately, never went away. So over the course of 3 weeks, he deteriorated incredibly. And we got the terrible news that sadly he had blood cancer. So we went through a 7 month long battle with that. He was never, meant to die. I suppose there was no terminal illness attached to his diagnosis. However, unfortunately, the chemotherapy and many other things took its toll. And therefore, sadly, in March 2016, he passed away. But I think really important point to note about what Sam just said, for me, this has been an adventure in a way. And I know lots of people would think that's a strange way to look at such a terrible tragedy, obviously, of a 19-year-old dying, but for me it completely changed my whole life. So I experienced something that I've recently learned and understood about called post-traumatic growth, and that was basically where I had experienced trauma, and in one hand I was experiencing post-traumatic stress, but in the other hand what was happening to me was this profound realization that I needed to do more and I needed to fulfill my life and go ahead and do something to realize my true potential. And so essentially in the end of 2016, early 2017, that's when my property business was born. And as my brother was an electrician, I wanted to do something that was sort of marrying up with what he'd always loved. And he was always into property and he was always joking with me that he was going to be a millionaire. So I felt what better way to honour him than to open a property investment business. So as Sam said, that's what I've been doing for the last 3 years now. Absolutely love it. So I'm the proud owner and director of KAF Properties. countries. And as obviously I mentioned, we've predominantly built up our portfolio from HMOs, so houses of multiple occupation, which I'm sure we'll come on to, and also flipping properties, so buying, renovating them and selling them on the open market. And then very recently, I've also started a podcast. So I also am the podcast host and owner of The Ambitious Entrepreneur, where I have been very, very lucky to meet some incredible people, such as Paralympic gold medalists, film producers, a whole host of really cool people, and interview them to understand what success is. So quite a varied life that I've had. Never one that I saw myself in at the start of my life, but here we are, and I couldn't be happy with how it's turned out, to be honest.
Amazing. I think we all go through with great adventures in our life, and that's enjoying those adventures will be the one will be greater outcome after that. And what you have shared, and your brother passing away 19 years is not a very mature age, I would say, but I think his soul was very mature at that time. And mm-hmm. when you see those people, dying early, their age, their souls are very mature, not their body, but mm-hmm. They are ready to take that next plunge to go to the next level in spirituality. That's another subject we can talk about. So tell us about your journey in. Yeah, you talk about banking, and then you went into property. The property was your, while you're talking to your brother at that time, it was an electrician. But property, was it a very easy to maneuver to go in, or did you had a lot of, you have to go through with a set of goals before you plunge into something?
Yeah, so I think if we take it right back, property was possibly always on the cards, not that I ever knew it. I'm a big believer in subliminal messages and the power of suggestion. And for a long time when I was younger, my granddad actually used to flip properties on the side of his work. So he was in a very fortunate position. He was the manager of a big company at the time, Coppersmith, and he used to take some of his men that should have been working on the coppersmith factory aside, and he would pay them to do some work on some houses that he was buying on the side. And whilst that was never a full-time role for him, I could always see a lot of inspiration in what he was doing, and I could see that there was a lot of money to be made. It's just my granddad was stuck in the job, and therefore he couldn't necessarily concentrate on the property business, and he made a really good wedge out of the property life, but it was never his first and foremost job. So I think there was a background of it, and it was always there. And then I think there was also the creativity piece that probably came from my mother. So she was always really into interior design, and our house always looked beautiful, and she was always decorating and changing things. So I very much got a good understanding from a young age about the sort of structural and building aspects, and also the sort of interior aspects and aesthetically how to make a house look lovely. So I think there was kind of a two-piece there that was always probably in the back of my mind. It was just something that I never really thought about. And then obviously when my brother got ill, at the time, as I said, he was an electrician, but he kind of always had this burning desire to be a millionaire. And we used to have this long-standing joke that one of us would get there first, and we didn't know which one it was going to be. And to be fair to my brother, he really had that entrepreneurial mindset much younger than I did, because I didn't see that at the time. And I'm 30 now, and up until 3 years ago when I started the business, it was never really a thing for me. I was very good at moving up in a corporate world and getting promoted, but never really understood kind of making my own way. Whereas my brother, he really got that right from the get-go. So he played a big part of that, because I would ask him questions about how he thought he was going to be a millionaire and what he was going to do to make all this money. And he'd talk to me about all sorts of things, right from sort of forex trading and oil trading and all sorts of weird and wonderful things that I had absolutely no clue about. But one of the things he would always speak about as well was property. And the kind of value in property and investing, and he really understood investing as well. He spent a lot of time understanding where to put your money and how to make the money grow. And that, again, that was something that I probably didn't have a great grasp of it in my younger years. So I think that was a big thing for me, and it was kind of always there. And then obviously the passing of my brother really accelerated then that drive and that need for me to do something that I felt strongly about. And I think there was some sort of natural transition, I suppose, because of the kind of history in my family of the property world and bits that we'd done. And then ironically, what was happening was whilst my brother was ill, my mum and dad had actually bought a property to flip themselves. Mm-hmm. And that was just nothing to do with anything. It was just a little project. They were thinking about early retirement. So that was kind of all happening as my brother was ill. And then obviously when he passed, the house kind of became a burden. So I really helped them kind of take that off the ground and get that moving. So I played a part in that as well. And so getting more involved in the property and taking on some of the managerial sort of project management things, that was another thing that was sort of on the cards then. So I think really over a period of time, lots of things unbeknownst to me, and this comes back to what I said at the beginning, was kind of pushing me in that direction. I just didn't know it then. And then obviously I tried to go back to work after my brother passed and it just didn't happen. I'd recently had a promotion, so I was quite new to the role, and then I never really got into it because I was spending all the time at the hospital with my brother. And when I tried to go back, I was just making too many mental associations with, you know, the hospital and my brother and work, and it was all interlinked for me and I just found it too difficult. So I was in a fortunate position that I had a little bit of money behind me that I'd saved and also some inheritance that I'd got. And I decided that I was going to take the plunge and just leave work. Now, I know most people might think that's a little bit nuts because I had absolutely no idea what I was going to do at that point. But it really just felt like the right thing for me. So I left work. And this notion of property was niggling at that point. You know, I'd seen the profit that my parents had made from the house that I'd helped them with, and I could see the value in it, and I could see how it would give me flexibility and time to grieve, and I wouldn't have to go back to a 9-to-5 role. And I guess that was a lot of the appeal. So I then just decided with the money that I had, you know, I said to my parents, how do you feel about doing another flip? Because they didn't want to go back to work either. My dad had actually been made redundant the day after my brother passed. So just to really add insult to injury. So, you know, and my mum definitely couldn't go back to work. So I kind of pulled this idea together, you know, what about starting a business? Let's just have a go at property. And it really did start as having a go. So we were sort of looking around, and because I had a loose understanding, you know, I got the whole piece about, you know, buying in a distressed state and buying at a low value to make sure you can capitalize on the profit. So I understood the parameters and roughly how that was going to work. So we went through a period of quite quickly, very successfully, buying probably 6 or 7 properties over the course of about 18 months, buying them, doing up, selling them on for profit. And that went really, really well. But I suppose one of the things was that can only take you so far, because what I didn't understand at the time was just concentrating on one strategy in property necessarily wasn't the right way to go. Because whilst I was getting big profit, there were lots of times when I would have lulls waiting for the profit to come because maybe the market had changed, you know, something was a bit stagnant. And that was the piece that I just couldn't quite pin together. Mm-hmm. And so I then found myself, just through some research that I did, in a room on a 3-day basic property training course with a big corporate company who deals with property. And that was really when everything changed for me. It just propelled me a million times more than I ever could have imagined. And then I bought into this company and became like a lifelong investor of it, if you were. And that gave me unlimited access to some incredible people that taught me everything I could possibly know about property today, made me understand the market, the tax behind it, the laws, the regulations, the rules. Lots of things that I just not quite understood before. And that was really where everything changed for me. And I just got an enormous grasp of property then. And that's when I obviously opened up into the HMO market and everything changed.
Well, there are two things which you mentioned about the flip, because there are audience which is going to be not only the UK, because they're going to be a global audience as well. So a flip might be also available in different countries as well, because they might be using a different word over there, or HMO is going to be a completely different word. So just in a small sentence, just describe what HMO usually stands for and why flip is what flip can do for a lot of people.
Yeah, no problem. So HMO stands for House of Multiple Occupation in the UK, and that's essentially where you would buy a house and you would create multiple rooms out of it. So it might be that it's a 2, 3, 4 bed house at the minute, and then you would maybe utilise what would have been the dining room and the living room area and make those into extra rooms. And you would usually put a bathroom in there, so like an ensuite room, and then you would rent each room out to individuals. And what that provides you is a very high cash flow income very quickly, and that was one of the main things that attracted me to it. So I guess from a UK perspective, that's what first and foremost, a HMO would be. A flip from a UK perspective is basically where you would buy a property, you would renovate it, so you'd do whatever works you needed to it. You would generally buy it in a distressed state, so it would be very run down, might need a new boiler, window, new kitchen, need some serious modernization, maybe a new roof, etc. And then you would pay the money to do all that work, and that would increase the value of the house incredibly, and then you would put it on the open market, and then you would get the profit from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think a lot of people are planning to do those things because you went through your own training and you learn a lot of other things as well, even though you had experience. But having a coach or a mentor is very important in this business, because when we had this earlier discussion, when people talk about JVs, when they talk about joint venture, and you are sitting in this big room and you talk about, a lot of people are having so much fun, and then you look at somebody and you just start doing the JV with somebody. That means you are just without thinking about it. You can't just create a JV with somebody, correct?
Yeah. I think the point you mentioned there about the mentor is incredibly important. So I've had a mentor for quite some time now who I met through my own network. And to be honest with you, the training and the mentor together is 100% what propelled me. And I think that that's one of the most important things that I could tell anybody about wanting to be an entrepreneur, whether it's in the property business, whether you want to be a trader, whether you want to, you know, start a glass blowing business, you know, whatever that might be, irrespective, go and find the expert that's already done it. So I actively sought out somebody that I, you know, more to your point with the JV, you know, whether it's a JV or a mentor or anybody, if you're going to do business with anybody, it has to be somebody that you know, like, and trust, and you have to build that up from the start, and there is nothing more important than that. And I really actively spent time trying to understand that. So when I went out looking for a mentor, you know, I made sure that I asked the right types of questions, and we built up trust, and we had commonalities and good interests, and I made sure that I understood her business and that she was already hugely successful. And as it turned out, she, at the time, she had an £8.6 million portfolio, which who doesn't want to follow in the footsteps of somebody like that? You know, but that's what it was about. You know, it was for me, where do I see myself in 3 years? And therefore, who do I want to work with that is already there? And I think that's the most important point. But the trust piece is absolutely massive, and that only comes over time. And if you're ever thinking of entering into a JV with somebody, please, please, please build up trust over time. As Sam said, you know, do not just jump into that. There's so many things, you know, that I've seen and heard go wrong. Luckily, nothing's ever happened to me personally, because I'm very cautious, but paperwork is key, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's, that the full piece, because you never know when something's going to go wrong. And it might even be something out of your control. You know, it might be that you buy a property together and the market crashes. That's unforeseen circumstances, but then you may differ about what you want to do with the property because the market's crashed. And though you really like each other, if you then suddenly have a disagreement and you're 200 grand in, that's not an easy thing to get out of, is it? It's a great point.
And because it's not only because what you're creating with JV is not only the business, is about your emotional connection with person as well, because we are building those emotional resilience that working together on the same bandwidth. Otherwise, what's going to happen is, if you are on a completely different island and I'm on a completely different island, even though you are invested in the middle, you are not going to both reach to that place, and somebody is going to drown in that, and then you will be blaming other person that because of you the entire portfolio drowned. So it's very important to do diligence, and it's very important to go through with this whole sets of a journal. Any business you're doing, whether even though with your siblings as well, I would say, you know, I do business with my siblings, and I just say there is a sort of a document is there.
Yes.
To understand, you know, that we are working in side by side as a joint venture, because if I'm going to be saying, okay, I'm the investor, I'm investing the money, you are the person who is just saying, yeah, give me the investment, I do the investment, and I'll do the job and everything. And if you are not doing the task, my money is not going to be worthwhile, correct? And because that's important, even a small piece of paper, you need to make sure that everything is documented and everybody's aware where we stand together. Otherwise, what's going to happen is you will be in completely dark. You will be just throwing stone. And with this market where a lot of things, there are rock builders, there are people who just want to skin you completely, because they are going to be show up and they'll say, I will do the job, we will take ownership of this. I recently had an experience with builders, because I bought a property, and then moving into the property, we thought, you know what, before we move in, one property my wife had, now I bought another property, which is going to be our residential, but that property has gone on the market for rental at the moment. So when you try to move into this property, you thought, you know, well, let's do the renovation before we move in. So we got a recommendation. We always ask for recommendation, and somebody says, oh yeah, come in and show you the kitchen, I show you everything, bathroom and everything, come in to our showroom. And I went to the showroom, we liked it. But we know the person, and a couple of people say, yeah, that's a good recommendation, you know, you should go with. So I said, because I was thinking of going for myself as a project manager, builders will come in, I will get all the material and everything, and I will make sure that they are going to deliver these things. And then I'll say, you know, my wife says to me, Sam, why should we take a headache? The project, let's give the project to somebody who have actually worked, and let's complete the work on time, because we wanted to move into the property and I don't want to get more headaches. So somebody will call me and say, Sam, so the silicone is finished, or Sam, oh, this is finished, or Sam, can you get some more mortar, Sam, can you get some more this? So I said, listen, I don't want to go through with that. I'll give you £1,000 extra, I will have less headache. Well, sometimes you trust people, but then they don't deliver those things. Mm-hmm. You know, the workmanship is completely ridiculous. And I wouldn't recommend this person to anybody.
No.
To anybody, I wouldn't recommend this person. And, you know, and they still haven't completed the task. They left the half, or they left a lot of things in the house. And in your experience, so you have given a task to your project manager, or you do run a project management task yourself, correct? So you invite builders to come and do the job in your house. So you'll say, listen, guys, boiler is working, everything is working, correct? Mm-hmm. You yes. Hand over the property, you get the property, everything working condition, correct?
Yes.
So I've given the same thing. And when I said my boiler is not working, I said, that's not my problem. And say, you put a new railing in my toilet. Mm-hmm. You should check whether it's warming up or not, correct? You can't just hand it over.
No.
Those completely devastated. No cleaning, nothing. Everywhere was disgusted, you know. Equipment has been left. You tell your customer, communication is very important, correct, in this business?
Yes,
communication absolutely. Is paramount, yes, correct? 100%. Even though you're not going to deliver the project on the decided date, but you can communicate with your customer and say, listen, Mr. Dosa, I understand we have agreed upon delivering your project on this and this date. Unfortunately, we have some issues with your appliances did not deliver on time because of COVID-19, XYZ thing. We understand, we are human, we all make mistakes. But there was no communication until I called them.
It's really bad. And I think that, you know, it's interesting what you say, because sometimes all the recommendations in the world still don't get it right, you know, and that is difficult, because you are taking a chance to a degree. And I do think that can only come with time, you know, but building up people that you trust. And it's a really great point, because I've had many similar experiences, you know, with property in the early days. And it's only really through recommendation after recommendation after recommend, you know, that eventually I have stuck with maybe one or two that I'm just really happy with. I know they do a good job. And like you say, the communication is very open. If something's not going to be done on time, they will call me, they'll let me know what the new deadline is, they'll explain what the problem is, and there's a lot of transparency there. But, you know, we've had it with a plasterer in the early days, where so he got recommended to us and they said he was really, really great. And to be fair, he did a couple of properties with us and he was good. But then it came to kind of the third, fourth, and he was getting complacent. He was comfy. He thought he knew us too well. And then he plastered, he had a whole house to plaster, and he plastered, I think, three walls, and then he didn't turn up for 5 weeks. And I chased him. He wasn't answering the phone. I eventually drove to his house, knocked on his door. His wife thought that he was at our house plastering, but he wasn't. We found him in the pub, you know, and that happens, and that will happen. And I think that's more of a bigger lesson about business, actually, that you are going to get stung. And that's one of the biggest things that puts people off being an entrepreneur, I think, or being self-employed, starting, you know, your own business or making your own money in life. It's that fear of getting it wrong, or something going wrong, or you've been robbed of your money. And you know what? The brutal answer is that all those things are going to happen. But they are, whether you want them to or not. And it's just about how you deal with them and how you push through them.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I read so many stories on certain groups on Facebook, and people are being stung by a lot of things, and the builders are not looking after the property properly, or they are just saw the leak coming in and they are not informing anybody, and then the TVs are being broken down and this is broken down. So there are a lot of things. The how much precaution a person can take.
Yeah. And it has to be, because it has to be reasonable, like you say, like, you know, you did your due diligence, or what you thought was your due diligence, you know, you've got the recommendations. And, you know, for the most part, that would suffice for most people. Like, I think that people have come to me and say, oh, Sarah, this person's really good. I've used them. They were great bricky. You know, they built a full extension for me. It was incredible. And then I'll go, oh, okay, let's use them. You know, and there's an element of trust there, particularly if you know the person really well that's recommending them. Why would you not believe them? There's no reason to. But it also could be that person did a really good job for you, friend, you know, but then they just don't do it for you. And you can't always get that piece right. And it is about reasonable precaution. One of the things that somebody once told me, which I actually really like now, is when I meet a new builder or a bricklayer or, you know, plasterer, plumber, electrician, whatever, and they, you know, even if they've been recommended by somebody that I know, I will then say, okay, can you tell me who your last three jobs were for, and can I call them, or can you, you know, get them to write to me or send me an email directly giving you a recommendation or just giving you a reference about your work and what you've done. And sometimes that's a really good third party way, because they can't, you know, lie to you then. They can't get out of it. There's no way that if you're getting that from the horse's mouth, that's another good way to kind of get those recommendations. So, and I mean, to be fair, that's absolutely no different to if you were running a different business and you were going for a, I don't know, you wanted to hire a new accountant or a new project manager, or you would do an interview. So why should it be any different? You know, and I do view it in that way. And I think it's sad when some of them, you know, tradesmen get a bit shirty about that. You know, they don't want to give that information. And I think, well, you know, it's your credibility at stake. Like, if you want the job and you know you're good, you've got nothing to hide, then you should go ahead and give me the reference that, you know, that I require. So I do think that the due diligence piece and the precaution piece is a big thing. But like you say, you can only do it to such a degree, and sometimes it's just not going to pay off. And I think you just have to accept that that's part of business generally.
Yeah. So tell us about besides your journey with the property, what other things you take on board?
So more recently, I've been thinking, which I am going to get into, is around speaking about my brother and what happened. And one of the reasons that I feel so strongly about that, and I have loosely done it at a few different events, but I think I'm really want to propel that in the next probably year to 18 months. And I think one of my big pieces is about giving back, and it's about helping. And I think, like many entrepreneurs, what kind of happens is you start doing something that you really enjoy, but then your mind keeps getting expanded and expanded, and you keep learning these new things, and suddenly you kind of realize what your true potential is what I would say. So you start off doing something that you're really passionate about and you enjoy, but then a lot of the time you sort of get into this space where you start realizing there's other things that you actually really want to accomplish as well that you never maybe thought were possible. And that was one of the big things for me. So I think speaking about the journey with my brother and about how to overcome trauma specifically, and how to use that to become meaningful. Because, you know, in life, we have a choice what we do with these adventures that you call them. And I love that. And, you know, we do have a choice when those things happen. And yes, there is grief, and yes, there is sorrow, and yes, there is heartache, but life doesn't stop. And, you know, my big message to anybody is really about what I call life after death. And I don't mean the crazy stuff, and I don't mean, you know, spirits or anything like that, ghost schools, but I'm really talking about when somebody dies, that's close to you, that you love, you know, you're left behind, but you still have to lead your own life. And that's really, really important. And it's about using that and remembering that person in a creative way, and taking that experience and using the experience, I suppose, and using the skills that you've learned from the experience to then be able to go on to do bigger and better things. And that was one of the big things that I took from it. So, you know, my big thing, I think, going forward is just to really kind of hope and inspire people. And one of the other things that's on my radar at the minute is setting up a charity in honor of my brother. So what really happened at the hospital that my brother was at was the cancer unit was absolutely fantastic, and there is the ability for one person to stop overnight with whoever's in the hospital. From in the teenage cancer unit, you are allowed somebody there all the time. But what was awfully difficult, we were lucky because we lived near the hospital, but what I witnessed around me was many, many people who lived hundreds of miles away from the hospital, because this was the only specialist unit, and their family just couldn't get there to be with them all the time because they were trying to juggle work or other things, and they had nowhere to stay. So one of the things I really am looking to do at the minute is to tie my property world with my brother, and I want to buy up some houses and create them into charities so that people can stay there next to the hospital free of charge, so that they're then able to stay with their loved ones and just able to and from the hospital and look after them. So I think they're the big things that are on my radar at the minute. Yeah.
Amazing. You can say not everybody can think that the way you are thinking, because we do go through with a lot of journeys ourselves and adventures ourselves, and the way we look at how you're going to create this ripple effect of helping, because you are lucky to be staying near to the hospital, but a lot of family, as you said, could not afford to stay in the hotel and then visiting back and forth. And for everybody has a completely different set of emotions, you know, when you go through with this entire raft of journeys. I was with my good friend, she was 60. He was suffering with so many things, but one thing which was the immaculate was that she always smiled. Even though she had screws around her neck, she had a minor stroke, she already got a couple of other issues going through with her journey, and then she wanted to go into operation. And since she went into operation, she didn't come back from there. She went through severe downturn from there. But she never stopped smiling. She always smiled. Even though whenever I used to go to the hospital, she always smiled. And she always said, "I was waiting for you. I was waiting for you." And she did not have family. She had family, but the family lives in Bristol, and I was the only one living in the London area at that time. And I always used to go and visit her, and when she come back to her house, and I was living in North London and she was living in West London, I used to travel west and North London. Mm-hmm. And whenever I never used to go, she called me and asked the carer to call me and say, where are you?
Wow.
Yeah, because we were very good friends. We were connected very well together. And my kids have loved her as well so much during that period of time and spent time with her as well. And she had this, a soul which was so a calming soul to give, is a giving mm-hmm. soul to give to a lot of people. And she always have gave to a lot of people. And one thing stuck in my mind was that, I said to a lot of people, you know, don't wait. If you want to see somebody, go and see them. If you want to speak to somebody, go and speak to them. Don't wait that tomorrow will come. You never know. Tomorrow you might find them in the coffin and then say, "Oh, I regret I did not go." And that's why there is a great Sufi saint, Rumi, have said, you know, if you want to get to give somebody a flower, just give to them today. Don't wait for tomorrow. Just give to them today. You just give them flower today instead of saying, you know what? And somebody was regretting about it and she was crying about it. I said, well, how many times I called you to come and see her? Mm-hmm. You were busy. You were busy, but we are not busy that much, but we are intent to show people around the globe that we are busy, but we are not busy. Actually, we're not busy, but the journey, what you are taking next now to create this amazing charity, I think it's going to go so well, so many places. I wish you all the best for that, you know. Going from your business or your journey, what sort of inspiration would you like to give to this new people coming into property development? Is this still a niche, or is there a big chunk of things person has to learn before they jump into this big pool?
So I think just from a general timing perspective, I think first of all, there's never been a better time to get into property. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons is that we've just hit a big recession. So if there's ever time to buy up property at a reduced price, now is the time. And every great property investor and developer will tell you the same thing, that we have spent months waiting for this. Like, there's been deals that we've been turning away, and you know, everyone's like, the good stuff is coming, and the good stuff is here now, and we've waited a long time for that. And when you look at that, all you really have to do is follow what they call in the UK the 18-year property cycle. Mm-hmm. and that will show you the peaks and troughs of the expectancy of when property market's going to be really high and when it's going to be really, really low. And we are right in the middle of that now. We've hit that dip, and this is the best time to buy up property. What you don't want to do is obviously buy it when it's at the peak. So, you know, lots of people have been waiting for that moment, and it's very much here now. And whether you like it or not, the sad fact of the matter is that lots of people now have been out of business. So there's going to be empty commercial properties. Lots of people will be losing the home, sadly, you know, so there's going to be lots of vacant properties, lots of possessions from the bank. But it does also mean that equally you can buy those properties, but all those people still also need somewhere to live. So then there'll be lots of rent, there'll be a big rental demand. So there really is like a full cycle going on at the minute of opportunities, probably more so than we've ever had before, because what everybody expected in the UK was that after Brexit, that's when the recession was going to happen. Everyone's kind of holding on for it. But then because Brexit just became COVID, it never happened. Yeah, So we're almost in this double recession now, which nobody really foresaw. So I think just from a timing perspective, if you were going to get into it, absolutely the right time to do it. I think the second point that you made around, is it niche? You know, can anybody do it? Does it need training? I think to a degree, yes. It depends what you want to do. If you're talking about a bit of a surplus income on the side, then, you know, of your main job, then maybe just get a bit of advice. And if you want to pick up some rental properties or flips, you know, whatever, speak to somebody like me. You're welcome to speak to me. Anybody that's listening, if you want to get any advice, more than happy to do so. But, you know, speak to anybody that knows a bit about property and maybe just get some advice. If this is becoming a full-time thing for you, then I think we're talking about something different. And as I say, that was really the difference for me, is because I was becoming a full-time property investor, just trying my hand at it wasn't enough. And whilst, don't get me wrong, that is one of the best ways to learn, and I had some great learnings from that. What really shaped my business and made me into a really good property investor as opposed to an okay one was obviously the amount of time that I invested in training. I think I worked out recently, spent over 400 hours training in property. And I know that that sounds colossal, but it is important. There are so many, and this isn't just the UK, or worldwide, there are so many laws and regulations that are consistently coming into place with property, particularly if you're a landlord, because, you know, really the onus is on you. It's your head on the chopping block if something happens to the tenants. So, I think that you need to get yourself properly trained, make no mistake. Like, that's really important. So I think that that's one piece. And the next piece that I know I mentioned before is getting a longer term mentor, because whilst the training's great, what you really need to look at is that consistent feedback that you're getting. Somebody that you can bounce deals off, that you can show properties to and say, is this a good deal? Is it a bad deal? You know, what do you think of it? Somebody that's been there and done it already. So I think that would be my overriding advice.
Oh, great idea and great insight for a lot of people who are going to be listening and thinking about going into property, because everybody feels or everybody thinks, you know, it's easy to make good money in properties, but then you need to do your due diligence a lot of times. And one thing which I would like to ask you is, because everybody is thinking about my earliest, if last 3 years, 2016 onwards, I was thinking about putting money into leads, putting money into in what other areas, mainly in the north of the England, north of England. Everybody is looking at, you look at the entire side of Sunderland, and then you're thinking about Manchester, then you're talking about Burnley, you're talking about Leeds, you're talking about Newcastle. So everybody from sitting in London, everybody saying, you know, you want to be having a portfolio, that's the place to go. Mm-hmm. In your view, are you still saying the same thing? Are we still reading, everybody is reading from the same hymn sheet, or are we thinking about something else?
So I think that's a really great question. And I think there's a bit of a double-ended answer. So broadly speaking, that's where I invest. So if you were to ask me on a general basis, I would say yes. That's where the money is. You know, if you look at capital growth over time, the entirety of the north of England really is set to do a record kind of capital growth over the next 3 years between now and 2023. So broadly speaking, yes, the north is the hub, if you like, and where most of the deals are going to lie. Having said that, it does very much depend on your strategy. So when I'm ever looking for a property, and what happens to me a lot now is that I have deal sources. So they're people that will be out anywhere in the UK, and they might be, I don't know, based in London, let's just say. And so they just specifically look for property in London. If they've got anything that they think I might be interested in, they'll ping it my way. And then there might be another one that's based in Wales, for example. So all these people will send me properties. But what's important is that you understand what strategy is going to work. Because yes, broadly speaking, the north of England is a great place to invest. Lots of other strategies work really well in multiple areas, and it's just about understanding your area. So there's a few probably things that I would go through when I'm thinking about looking for a property. So if someone, for example, brings me a deal in Cardiff in Wales, let's say, the first thing I would do is I would go on to Rightmove, and I would look at, so let's say they brought me a two-bed semi-detached house. I would look on Rightmove, and I would look at all the two-bed semi-detached houses, and I would see, what's the demand? Are the loads of two-bed semi-detached houses selling, or are the loads renting? So is it a sales market, or is it a rental market? And that would be the first thing that I would do. And then let's say, for example, I could see that it was more of a sales market, but actually three beds were selling rather than two beds. Then I would look at the property. I'd say, right, well, could I convert this property to make it into a three bed? So it's all about looking at the area in detail and understanding if it's going to work for you in that specific area. Because, you know, as I said, obviously my speciality predominantly is houses of multiple occupation, but they only work in very niche areas of the UK where there's lots of young professionals or students that are happy to live in a house together. So again, that's a different thing again. So you're looking for different demand again. So you're looking to see, you know, street by street, you can get all sorts of really great property data apps and online websites and things now that will really give you the details. So it'll show you if there's any HMOs in the area, the sort of people that live there, what's the demographic, is it a big student area? And you really need to hone into that level of detail to understand if that property is going to work for you in that area. And I think that's one of the greatest downfalls of property investors. It's that over-enthusiasm. They get excited. You know, you see a property, you love it, you fall in love, because there's a lot of emotion involved in property. So you see it, you fall in love with it, you're excited about it, and then you just all guns blazing and you pay too much for it, you don't know what you're going to do with it, you know, and we've all fallen into that trap. But if you've ever invested in property, you've definitely fallen into that trap before.
Because we watch these programs, Under the Hammer, and those programs coming out on the TV, and we get this so much excitement that people are doing, going onto the auction and buying the properties and then renovating it, and that excites you a lot of things, and they started thinking, you know, I can do DIY in my house. I can be able to do those sort of things as well. And fair enough. Yeah, I've done it. I had a property portfolio myself, and I used to do all the DIY in my properties as well. And I remember doing it. And sometimes I have to remember thinking of that, don't take a risk, mate. Call professionals to come and do the jobs. You know, tiny bits, you can do those sort of things. But then you call the people who does the boiler and who does the main thing, like electrical and all sorts of things, because you are not insured. You are not covered with all those sort of things. So you have to call upon this. So that's what happened. You know, we get zealous about, you know, everybody is making money. I can make money as well. And jumping without knowing how deep the water is, you know. Yeah. And as you said, you know, it looks very green. It looks really, really rosy. And when you buy the property, but then when you come into the house, and if you don't really do your surveys, if you don't know, because that's, again, when you go for an auction, you literally go through with the descriptions and everything, and then literally you go and visit the property, and you are not allowed to do a sort of any sort of a survey or anything. You are going to be going, okay, you moved in, you bought the property, end up the entire roof needs to be replaced, or the entire electric system needs to be replaced. So these are all overheads. Again, these are all learning curves. We learn with those sort of things. And like yourself as a professional who has been doing it for the last 3 years, who will be able to guide a lot of people. So I will highly recommend people who are listening to this podcast and thinking of going into a property market, get in touch with Sarah, because Sarah will initially give you guide you what is important to jump into this property business, because as she says, is the right time, as we are in a double dip in the recession, and going and buying. If you, and this bank is not paying you any money right now, so everybody's thinking, you know, let's go into property, but without the right strategy, you might going to foot, or you're going to shoot on your foot. That's the biggest mistake a person can do.
Absolutely, that is phenomenal advice, and I can only echo that, to be honest. Like I said, I'm more than happy for anyone to ask me any questions. You can contact me on any social media platforms, more than happy to assist and answer any questions, because it was an absolute minefield, you know, for me, and loads of people have been incredibly kind to me, and I would love to do that back to anybody that's interested, you know, that just needs a bit of help. So please feel free, you know, my doors are always open. But completely agree to what, you know, what Sam said there. I can only echo those words of wisdom about jumping in. It's all about being careful and getting it right first time, because there's a lot of money to be made in property, but that also means there's a lot of money to be lost.
Absolutely. And that, because I remember going through with several hundred workshops, you know, you jump into workshop and people invite you, go into the workshop, you're listening to so many things, and then you started thinking about, oh, these guys talking about you don't have to use your own money, you know. Money is available. You just can buy the property and then say where the money is coming from. Everybody is thinking about it. If I don't want to spend my own money, whose money I'm going to be spending? Somebody is going to be investing in the money, in the property, correct? So there are a lot of loopholes. There are a lot of actually dark holes as well. So you have to be very careful where you are putting, because you might lose your own property if you are not going to be very careful. So talk to professionals. Like Sarah is professional. She's been doing it for the last 3 years. She has learned a lot of things. She has gone through with her own adventures as well. So I will highly recommend to talk to her as well. So Sarah, I'm going to put a lot of information about you as your background and everything. And if there is anything else, would you like me to put into this podcast, I can share with all the viewers to get in touch with you and chat with you. Tell us, before I close, this is a session where I ask you, tell us about your favorite food.
Ooh, I like that. Great question. So my all-time favorite food is actually a combination. So it's chicken and stuffing. So I'm an absolute foodie at heart. Love food. I'm so glad you brought this up, Sam. It's genuinely one of my favorite subjects. And I have always been a huge fan of the Sunday roast. I do like it. I do like all cuisines. Honestly, there's nothing I haven't found that I don't like, to be honest. But yes, absolute massive fan of the Sunday roast. I'm actually drooling thinking about this for anybody that can't see me. And yeah, there's just something about the whole chicken and stuffing combination, but it has to be sage and onion stuffing. Yeah. I'm very specific about that with some gravy on.
Yeah, I love sage and onion as well, and that's the gives you that a great taste, and the tantalizing taste in your mouth when you put with a lot of gravy, with the roast potatoes and the crispy potatoes and all sorts of vegetables and everything. Yeah, it reminds me this Sunday coming, I might get the roast dinner done this time.
I'm already booked in for a Sunday lunch on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
At a local cafe near me. I'm already booked in. I'm one step ahead. I'm ready.
Oh, my God. And this is a long weekend. You know, there's a bank holiday weekend.
Exactly. Oh, my God.
Tell us about your, if you have several hobbies, but tell us one specific hobby which you really, really indulge and enjoy yourself.
Great. So I'm a massive adrenaline junkie. So I've done bungee jumps. I have done, more recently, actually, I've done a skydive, which I absolutely loved. Did that. I got a surprise that for my 30th birthday. It was absolutely phenomenal. 12,000 foot. It was over Cambridge and it was absolutely phenomenal. It was a lovely, lovely day. What an exhilarating experience. If anybody's not done it, go do it. And for those of you who have done it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Just that free falling. What an amazing sensation. I've driven a Microlight twice. That's been cool. So lots of different things. So if anyone's got any great suggestions for other adrenaline-based things for me to do, please let me know and I'll take them up.
So I've done the light craft as well. I did a helicopter. I did a focal plane. I'm thinking of going for the bungee jumping, and the skydiving is also on my list of doing things.
Yeah.
There is a zip wire in Wales, which is the zip wire. I'm thinking of going for that one as well.
You must do that.
Yeah. Have you done that?
Yes, that's incredible. You must do that.
Wow. Well, somebody says to me, Sam, you need to go there and have some great adventure. So last but not least, tell us about your... any books which you recommend somebody to read?
Ooh, good one. I'm going to say, I think my top three books are going to be Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, which I'm sure must come up time and time and time again. Think and Grow Rich for Women by Sharon Lecter.
For women?
Really? Yeah,
oh
by Sharon Lecter.
I was thinking you said you're going to say Napoleon Hill.
Hill, yeah. So this is a slight twist. So she worked with the Napoleon Hill Foundation for a while, and then she like adopted her own version of the book. So that's a great book. And then my third one, I am going to say Personality Isn't Permanent by Benjamin Hardy.
Amazing books, amazing. I got a good library over here as well. I'm still going through with so many of the great books, and I'm also got a great library as well as got the Kindle as well, which has also so many books on that as well.
Yeah.
So I think I never had this notion of reading, even though I've said in my previous podcast, and my dad, I'm not a British, I'm Pakistani. I'm brought up in Pakistan. I came in 1996 over here. But my father always had this thought of thinking ahead of game, and used to order Reader Digest, the most expensive Reader Digest. He used to order from Singapore in Karachi, and he used to pay for that. So the children will read, and we were the useless bunch. We are five brothers. We are the useless one. I was the one who used to get a few pages, and I used to get so bored with it, reading it. I used to put it back. And we did not, and he stopped because we had about 60 volumes, which every month it used to come. And Reader Digest was the most renowned publisher in the world, and everybody used to get Reader Digest. And I never used to read it. Since my children born in this country, and they were young, and I started reading with them, it becomes like, I should read as well. I should start reading books. I started reading books, and I really learned a lot of things from the books. And it's one of those things, you know, you captivate yourself. I was on holiday. I read certain books. Was amazing suspense and some different sort of, I see how people can think in the completely different diversion or different directions. So it's amazing. It's amazing. Sarah, thank you very much for your insight. And it was a brilliant podcast for giving me the chance to speak to you. and I hope you have enjoyed it. It's the Chai with Sam Dosa, and I wish you all the best of your future endeavors.
Thank you so much, Sam. Thank you for having me, and thank you everybody for listening at home. It's been an absolute pleasure.